From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of February 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. We'll explore wind energy with Jeff Bossert from IPM, that's Illinois Public Media. He'll help us take a look at the benefits and some of the concerns of wind energy in East Central Illinois. And then we'll talk about the agricultural energy markets with Dan O'Brien. He's at K-State Extension in Kansas. As we close out our program, we'll pick up the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of the Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. The nearby March contract in the soft red winter wheat pit at $6.62 and a quarter, up 16 and a half. July $6.79 and one half cents, up 16. The hard red at $7.18 and three quarters, a settlement price 16 and a half cents higher for the July futures in Kansas City. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, nearby March contract, 653 and a half, 9 higher. May at 657 and a quarter, up 8 and three quarters. And July corn, $6.58 and three quarters, 8 cents higher. September contract, $5.95 and three quarters, up 8 and a quarter. And December at 563 and a half, up 8 and a half cents. The March corn for next year at $5.74 and a half, 7 and a half cents higher. March soybeans up 11 and a half, $13.05 and a quarter. May at 13.12 and a half, a dime higher. July at 13.19 and three quarters, up 9 and a quarter. And November beans at $12.88 and a half, up 7 and a quarter. January of next year at $12.91 and three quarters, up 5 and a quarter cents. March bean meal at $3.46.50, up $5.60. March bean oil 4 cents lower at $54.42. Live cattle futures finished the April contract at $128.27 and a half, down 35 cents for the day. June futures $126.20, down 50. April feeders at $158.65, 87 and a half cents lower. The May contract at $160.12 and a half in the feeder cattle, down 57 and a half cents per 100 pounds, and the lean hogs finished the May at $96.77 and a half cents, down 92 and a half cents. June at $97.72 and a half, down 35. You are listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, April contract at $106.79 a barrel, down $1.77. Ethanol at $2.26 and three tenths. That's 2 and four tenths of a cent higher. Natural gas at $2.52 and a half, down 7 and 8 tenths of a cent. And heating oil at $3.23 and two tenths, down 5 and 3 tenths for the day. The gold futures at $1,787 even, $13.40 higher, and the dollar now at 78.27. down 0.29. The CRB index at 323.12, that's down 1.97. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. As it comes from the National Weather Service, yet this afternoon, cloudy skies, a high of 51 degrees with a southeast wind at 11 to 13 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 17. And tonight, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, and then showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 9 p.m. this evening. A low of about 48 degrees with a south wind at 13 to 17, gusting to 24. A chance of rainfall this evening in the area set at 90%. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, gradually becoming sunny then. A high of 61 degrees tomorrow. Breezy with a southwest wind at 18 to 21. That'll increase to 26 to 29 in sustained winds and could gust as high tomorrow as 43 miles per hour. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 34. Breezy with a west wind at 21 to 24, decreasing to 13 to 16. The winds gusting as high as 33 tomorrow evening. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 53. With a west wind at 7 to 11, gusting to 16 Thursday night, partly cloudy, and a low of 39 degrees. By the time we get to Friday, we should see showers again, possibly a thunderstorm or two, mostly cloudy, a high of 57 degrees, with a chance of precipitation on Friday set at 60% in the area. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour and talk with Don Day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the phone line now with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the agricultural markets is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the marketplace today.
Well, you know, we started off, the evening started very easy last night, and we recovered in the early hours, and we just sort of continue with that. There was no turnaround Tuesday today as we went along. Very light as far as fundamental news through the day, and the funds continued to be buyers when they couldn't sell it off. Why they popped back in, and they ended up being about buyers of 4,000 beans and 2,500 corn, and a couple thousand wheat, basically taking us on up through that 650 level and closing above there and above the $13 level in the beans. So it's a somewhat positive close as far as breaking through resistance levels.
And breaking through the resistance levels to the upside, is there enough fundamental news to make this work?
The fundamental news that we're looking at basically isn't saying that we should have added the update today, Todd. I mean, basically the Chinese crush margins are deeply in the red. We're seeing that we are technically overbought. We're seeing that some of the people now are saying that some of the private estimates that they don't think will be quite as bad as some of the real bad people are saying as far as the beans in South America. But we are seeing a flow of money coming in here, and it can go a little bit farther. But we saw a lot of advisory firms advising in some sales of old crop corn and beans today.
Would you be in agreement with them?
We followed suit and did sell some more corn and beans today.
Are you an advocate of really the new crop sales at this point, and to what level, if so?
You know, what we did is we didn't do any corn sales today. We did do some bean sales by buying $13 puts, you know, and selling calls above it and puts below it, so it didn't cost as much to do that. So we were putting the bottom under the bean market at $13.
And you've had a couple of days to absorb, and I don't know that this was that big a deal. The Ag Forum's 94 million acre corn acre forecast for the United States, does it look right to you?
Well, I think that we're going to see a lot of corn planted. I think we're seeing a little bean acres maybe being switched over in southern Illinois, southern Indiana, maybe Arkansas and some places like that with these bean prices going on up. And they don't have quite the advantage of the corn production being as much higher as central Illinois and central Indiana. But all in all, I think we're going to have a lot of corn planted. Whether we can get to that 164 level that the government's talking about, that's going to be up in the air.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thanks, Tom.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Up next, East Central Illinois has become a popular location for wind farms, with several facilities up and running and more being proposed. Jeff Bossard visited wind farms in Ford and Iroquois counties, and he spoke with residents, officials, and experts to learn why the region is such a draw for wind energy and if the benefits outweigh the concerns.
John and Diane Connor have farmed the same land near Sheldon in rural Iroquois County for 45 years, and since last spring, their property has been surrounded by wind turbines.
I said, it sounds like a jet airplane. Everybody laughs when I say that, and I said, no, it does. That's what it sounds like to me.
The Settlers Trail Wind Farm is the first development in the state for Chicago-based Eon Climate and Renewables. Diane says the company first started knocking on doors in their area about 5 years ago, offering contracts and more money than farmers could make off their land.
It sounds like it's a really good deal when you're looking at $8,000 income a year for just having a tower put up on your place.
The plan took shape as the Iroquois County Board approved a zoning ordinance to back the project. It allows turbines to locate 1,500 feet from homes, but the Connors were skeptical. Diane says she was concerned about what turbines would mean to the landscape and land value, and she had heard reports of noise pollution and shadow flicker through wind farms in northern Illinois. The Connors chose not to sign on, but their neighbors did. Once the turbines were in place, Diane says their fears became reality, with sounds resembling a jet airplane affecting their sleep at night.
It's my understanding that other counties that are considering the wind farms are using us as a basis to look at our mistakes and trying to rectify that before they do sign on with windmill companies.
The Connors' neighbors, Mark and Cindy Nagley, signed on to Settlers Trail. They don't have the same concerns about wind farms. They've been paid for the use of their property. But Mark Nagley agrees with John and Diane that setting up the turbines proved difficult for the whole area.
It's hard to stop being a farmer and look at it from a construction phase because they're into it to get their project done, and we're thinking they shouldn't be anywhere. They shouldn't be out there, but that's what they have to do to get the job done.
In order for renewable energy companies to locate in rural areas, construction crews hired by the developer often have to grade and level the road with earth-moving equipment and add surfacing that will let companies bring in heavy cranes used to haul wind turbines. But both couples say gravel roads near their property have been reduced to washboard, with wavy patterns in the surface causing speed bumps and puddles when it rains. Mark Nagley.
It's like anything else. If you don't start with a smooth surface, then anything that you put on top of it just conforms to the roughness of what's underneath.
Matt Tulis is a spokesman for E.ON, who says it's working with a local road commissioner. And he admits setting up wind farms will cause disruption to landowners' property.
Whether it's debris in the field, if we've broken some of the drainage tiles, you know, if there's dirt that needs to be reclaimed, you know, we've been working with the landowners on an individual basis and trying to address whatever concerns they have.
Ron Schrader chairs the Iroquois County Board. He's heard from Sheldon residents that experience shadow flicker and other problems with nearby turbines, but Schrader says the county needs a tax benefit from somewhere in today's economy.
We need some income, and we can't get income by your taxes will just keep getting raised, and there's no jobs and no tax base. If you drive from just Crescent City to Watseka, Burns Implement is gone, and they had a lot of employees that made good wages. Lifetime Doors is gone. There's nothing to keep our young people in the county. There's not that many good jobs.
E.ON Climate and Renewables also has a wind farm in nearby Paxton in Ford County. Many of its turbines are visible from I-57. The superintendent at Paxton Buckley Lota Schools calls the Pioneer Trail wind farm the district's most reliable source of revenue. Cliff McClure says he expects the district to receive $1.1 to $1.3 million in assessed taxes over 2 years, beginning in the summer of 2013. But he says at this point, they're not targeted for special projects.
Save for tomorrow, you know, and look at what some of those needs are, some of those things. But we've talked about some different repairs of buildings and some of the things that we could do instructionally. So, yeah, we've talked about those things, but no, that money's not earmarked as of this time.
Like E.ON's other wind farm near Sheldon, this one required a zoning ordinance. But in Ford County, it's also become an election issue.
There are quite a few new candidates now that are going to run, basically because they're concerned on the wind farms.
Ford County Board Member Tom McQuinn has turbines bordering his property. And to this point, says he can't complain about the job E.ON Climate and Renewables did or the tax income it's bringing. But like Schrader, he admits there are concerns over a turbine's distance from someone's home.
That is an area that I still think could be looked at, readdressed, because I do agree that if you're a non-participating person, you really shouldn't have one right up next to you, especially considering that the windmill farms have all pretty well said that they can arrange these in a way to not really affect non-participating people.
Ford County Board candidate Cindy Erke says local officials failed to take into account concerns of health, safety, and property value when looking at wind developments.
Well, I want to thank everyone for coming tonight. Mayor Flessner, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity for this meeting.
Last November, those on each side of the issue spoke at a hearing in the Ford County community of Roberts, where BP wants to set up a wind farm. And Cindy says many times these projects are approved before residents are made aware of them.
After they learn all about it and they are say, gung-ho, great, I want to live amongst them, I want to participate in this, that's wonderful. And if they say, I've just learned all this information and what am I going to do with this? I'm not happy with this decision. Then they need to take steps to remedy the situation.
Erke and fellow county board candidate Ann Erke, who's also her mother-in-law, head up the group Energize Illinois, which contends that wind power is not a reliable resource. But wind power supporters say East Central Illinois lies in the sweet spot of the state's wind corridor. David Loomis is director of the Center for Renewable Energy at Illinois State University. He says counties like Iroquois, Ford, and Champaign also possess the proper transmission capacity to use the power generated.
And the third thing you need is a good market to sell it into. And so we have a big load center in Chicago. We've had a renewable portfolio standard in the state that's mandated that Ameren and ComEd buy an ever-increasing amount of their electricity from renewable resources.
Luma says perhaps the biggest issue faced by local officials now is what it will cost to tear down the large turbines at the end of their expected lifetime, or if a company goes out of business before that.
What kind of surety do we have? What form does that take? Is that a letter of credit, an escrow account? When does that money have to be deposited? And how much is it going to cost? And that's a difficult question to say with great certainty, because we're looking at, 20 to 30 years later.
Opponents of wind energy can be expected to continue their fight as proposals for new projects come before local officials. But inaction in Congress could discourage developers from making proposals. The recent extension of a payroll tax cut by Congress failed to extend a wind energy tax credit beyond this year, something experts say will keep developers from making proposals and costing jobs. But Luma says it's possible the credit could be extended during the lame duck session of Congress after November's election. I'm Jeff Bosser, Illinois Public Media.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Please do visit us online at WILLAG.org. K-State University's agricultural economist Dan O'Brien joins us now to take up the agricultural energy markets. He's traveling across the state of Kansas. Where are you today, Dan?
Actually, we're in both Kansas and Nebraska. We're meeting with producers at some profitability meetings.
One of the things that you're taking up is the ethanol industry and how it's faring at this point. You gave us some information last week. Can you summarize it for me?
With the policy changes that that have been instituted for the U.S., for the ethanol program, i.e. the elimination of the import tariffs and the lenders' credits, we're left with the renewable fuel standard, and I think you can see some of the ramifications of that in both the USDA's long-term projections of ethanol usage as well as what they're projecting just for for the current marketing year. Again, for the first time since over the last couple of decades, we're not just plugging in at least a 300 to 500 million bushel increase in U.S. corn usage. And I think that in this coming year could have a big impact on corn prices and again, the overall corn industry. But that I think that impact will be even more pronounced as we move on down in the future. So, if you're a corn producer hearing that, you're probably somewhat troubled, given that we've been driven so much by expansion in ethanol production in terms of corn supply demand balances and just general tightness. So it's an issue of concern in terms of corn producers. For ethanol producers, I think what we were talking about, Todd, with that group was that, it's a maturing, hyper-competitive industry, and I think those ethanol producers that are very cost-competitive will probably continue to do pretty well. But if for whatever set of reasons, not having corn supplies in your local area in any one year, or having a debt structure that makes for higher costs, if for any of those reasons, if an ethanol producer doesn't have as low a cost of production as competitors that really work to their disadvantage.
We're within a couple of years of maximizing the congressional mandate for use of ethanol in the gasoline supply. Do you think that we have reached a point now where we will begin to back off on that usage, and what impact might it have?
I think that's right. Yeah, the renewable fuel standard does increase till 2015 and to 15 billion gallons per year, and corn usage to match that will be about 5.2, 5.3 billion bushels of corn. So there's a little bit of room yet, but not much for continued growth unless we really would see E15 or E85 take off. And right now, with you know, good questions about the gas prices on in the future, et cetera. We just have a lot of dynamic factors and questions in play that add a good amount of uncertainty to the ethanol industry.
Are you hearing anything from Washington, D.C. that would suggest that E15 might be adapted more widely than the 2001 newer model cars U.S. EPA has already said it's okay to use it in?
I have not heard of those discussions. I think the industry is seeking ethanol industry itself is seeking to move in that direction. I have not heard of new specific policy initiatives in that direction. I think that's the hope, though, that just by competitiveness and price efficiency, they'd be able to move there.
Do you think vehicles older than 2001 might be able to efficiently use E15 as they now use E10?
You know, you're asking me questions that are good questions, Todd. And I'm hesitant to answer them. You know, they're laden with legal issues that different people have weighed in on and such. So at this time, I'll probably defer. In general, if you listen to folks from the industry, they have been championing the idea that there isn't that much of a problem. But I think those issues would just have to be worked out as we move forward by car users on one hand and ethanol producers on the other.
Can you turn your attention to the marketplace for ethanol over the next several months and whether margins will be good enough?
You know, we've got a real horse race going on. I think, you know, on the one hand, higher gasoline prices would be positive for ethanol, for ethanol profitability margins. That's racing against the rise that could happen in corn input prices if we get any threat to the crop this year. What I'm talking about in these meetings is that, you know, if we do get higher acreage trend line yields, we could see markedly lower corn prices, at least in the Western Corn Belt, as we move on in fall of 2012, you know, more like, if we get a 13.7 to 14 billion bushel corn crop, we could see corn prices 425 to 475, something like that. Those lower prices would be net positive for the ethanol industry. Corn producers may not like it as well, but generally, lower input costs would be help the profitability of ethanol plants. And then, again, you would so much then would be just dependent on the U.S. economy and gasoline prices staying at high levels. If that scenario comes into play, it's probably net positive for ethanol.
Dan, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Todd, thank you very much.
Dan O'Brien is an Extension Agricultural Economist at Kansas State University. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
It's National Chili Day. There are several theories on where chili began, among them that cowboys invented chili while driving cattle. Supposedly, cooks planted oregano, chilies, and onions among patches of mesquite to protect them from foraging cattle. The next time they passed the same trail, they'd collect the ingredients, add beef, and make a dish called Trail Drive Chili. Perhaps the earliest mention of the dish, although not by name, was by J.C. Clopper, who in 1828 noted how poor people cut meat they could afford into a kind of hash. with nearly as many pieces of pepper as there were pieces of meat. On this day in agricultural history in 1835, at the DuPont Corporation, Dr. Wallace Hume Carruthers invented nylon. A patent was issued in 1837, and nylon stockings soon followed. Nylon has also been used in products as varied as tires to blood plasma filters. Carruthers also invented neoprene, a synthetic rubber that's today often used in horse breast collars. And speaking of horses, in 1979, Mr. Ed the Talking Horse died. The pilot show, entitled The Wonderful World of Wilbur Pope, was produced by George Burns, but it was never broadcast. TV bosses, however, thought it could be a successful TV show with a few changes. The TV series Mr. Ed first became a syndicated show on January 5th of 1961. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon on the phone line. Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for taking the time. Can you tell us about the weather forecast for our part of the world?
Well, get ready for some wet weather. We're going to be looking at a pretty active weather pattern as we head into the last couple of days of February, and March is going to start off rather active with several weather systems coming across the Midwest, the Great Lakes, the Mississippi Valley, the Ohio Valley. All will see several opportunities for precipitation, with one storm coming through here tomorrow and into Thursday, then another one right behind that. That'll be coming in late Friday and into Saturday. It looks like it'll be a pattern where, for the most part, it's mostly going to be wet for the Midwest, cold enough on the backside for a little bit of snow. But do be ready for an active weather pattern, which is not unusual for March.
And how much rainfall do you think we might get over the next 24 to 72 hours?
Well, with this first system, the heaviest precipitation will be across southern Indiana, southern Ohio, and especially Kentucky. Kentucky could see anywhere from 2 to 3 inches of rain in some areas, while the southern portions of Indiana and Ohio, probably looking at a half inch to an inch and a half, lesser amounts into the central areas of those states.
Will the northern and northwestern particular parts of the Midwest and Corn Belt also receive a little precipitation over the
time?
They
will. It will be in the form of mostly snow. This will be especially true for the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa. All under the gun for some rain and snow, heavy snow, in some of those northern areas with the system moving through here over the next couple of days.
And then if you turn your attention to out west and the hard red winter wheat growing regions, what kind of weather forecast do they have?
Well, they've got a little bit of precipitation in the forecast. Now, areas of Nebraska and Kansas will fare the best. It's still going to be a little bit dry. Oklahoma, southwest Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, panhandle areas. I see them in a better position in about a week to 10 days to get precipitation, but in the next week, not too much.
Brazil and Argentina are coming in on the end of their growing season, or approaching it at least in some places. How does it look at this time in that part of the world?
Well, it looks a lot like it has here over the last week or so. The areas that are going to be a little more wet will be Brazil. A little bit drier will be Argentina.
And other places around the planet that we ought to check in on that you're watching?
Well, it's not nearly as cold as it's been the last couple of weeks in Europe. We are seeing a very active pattern across the northern hemisphere, and this is going to lead to some pretty good chances for precipitation over many areas of eastern and western and central Europe, as well as eastern and central southern portions of Asia. Usually this time of year we see that, so the prospects for precipitation in many northern hemisphere areas looks pretty good.
Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
The
Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.